Welcome back to the Brittany Hughes Show. Happy Thursday, everybody. So first of all, right off the top here, I need to apologize to you guys because we did not run an episode last week, and I'm very sorry for that. I came down earlier last week with an absolutely atrocious case of laryngitis. Hit me out of nowhere. Weird thing. Never actually got sick. Never felt sick. Just voice decided to take a hiatus and woke up Monday morning and literally could not speak above a whisper. And it did not get better until later on in the week. So if you are looking for the episode of the Brittany Hughes Show from last week and you didn't see it, that would be why I actually could not talk. So there's that. I just wanted to kind of clear that up. Thankfully, it has come back. I'm still a little bit gravelly, still get a little bit hoarse from time to time. So if it sounds like I'm a frog addicted to Marlboro Reds, you will know why. But I'm going to try to get through this. It might end up being a slightly shorter episode than usual because of that. But that's actually going to be really tough, because we have so much to talk about. Of course, the big news this week is the debt ceiling. Okay, and this has been actually really the big news for the last couple of weeks in this sort of political football that's been tossed back and forth between two sides of the political aisle that, quite frankly, I think by and large agree on more than they disagree on. Because we seem to have a whole lot of pretty lackluster conservatives, so-called conservatives, that are giving up quite a bit in this bill that is supposedly, according to Kevin McCarthy, going to start turning us around. We're slowly starting to turn this ship from its heading across the, you know, this waterfall that we're going down, which, by the way, I think we've already pitched ourselves off of. I think literally, like, that ship has sailed. I'm not really seeing how anything in this bill actually fixes any of that. But Kevin McCarthy and Joe Biden reached an agreement earlier this week on the debt ceiling. This agreement has angered liberals who want to see us fling ourselves off of this cliff even faster, can't possibly come quick enough for them, as well as conservatives who have enough common sense to rightly point out that we can't keep spending ourselves into oblivion. This is completely out of control, has been for a long time. We have racked up over $32 trillion in debt in this country with no sign of slowing down anytime soon. This bill does not go nearly far enough in trying to stop that and trying to put together, first of all, even temporary reforms that could help slow this down, but especially long-term reforms. Some way to try to make sure that we won't just rev up the engines again in a couple of years when we've got another congressional turnover and we're going to be right back where we started. There's nothing meaningful in this bill that does anything but slap an extremely flimsy Band-Aid on a hemorrhaging bullet hole. So in January of 2023, the national total debt, just to give you kind of a perspective on where we're at and what this bill is going to supposedly do, the national debt and the debt ceiling both stood at $31.4 trillion, trillion with a T. But apparently that's not enough because we have a Congress and have for years that keeps finding things to spend our money on, and it's always more than the federal government actually takes in. The average household isn't allowed to do that. Get in big trouble if you keep on racking up debt, and you know, at a certain point, the bank tells you, we're not going to loan you anymore. But of course, politicians don't have rules. The federal government doesn't have those rules. We'll just print more money. Who cares about inflation? We'll just keep borrowing from our grandchildren's grandchildren, and we'll figure out the problem later. As long as the same politicians keep going out and getting elected, what does it really matter that we're absolutely circling the fiscal drain? So the United States, because we continually spend more than we take in, has run a deficit averaging nearly $1 trillion a year since 2001. So we're just playing with Monopoly money now. None of it actually matters. It's all fake. This is all imaginary money at this point, because that's how we're spending it. We're spending it like it's absolutely worthless, and like the American people that are earning the money to then get dumped back into the federal coffers, or stolen, quite frankly, if you take kind of my line on it. Those people don't matter. Your hard work doesn't matter. All that matters is that these same politicians keep getting elected, and then we have issues like this that come up every few years, where then supposed conservatives get all up in arms about how fiscally responsible they are, you know, and then they go and try to shove something through like this. But there's been a deal, right? There's been a deal. We are careening towards the debt ceiling drop-off. And apparently, if we default on our debt, the entire world's going to explode and everything's going to be chaos and we're all going to die in a fiery chasm, like the first minute that it happens. Which, again, I'm not saying that defaulting on the debt wouldn't be bad. I'm not saying that it would be good for the economy. It certainly wouldn't be good for the economy. But you know what's also not good for the economy? Continuing to borrow more money that we aren't paying back. We're just racking up more debt. And it's going to be something that future generations have to deal with. Meanwhile, we've got rampant inflation. None of that is good for the economy. But this deal that McCarthy and Joe Biden have reached, that certain people are very unhappy with, but way too many people seem to be perfectly fine with. Under this deal, Congress would suspend the debt ceiling until 2025, because of course that makes everything better. We'll just kick the can down the road. We'll suspend the debt ceiling, which is different, by the way, than raising the debt ceiling. Raising the debt ceiling is putting another cap on it. Suspending the debt ceiling is basically just saying, we know that we set a debt ceiling before. We're just now giving the federal, the Treasury, license to ignore it. Just ignore that debt ceiling that we voted on before. We're gonna suspend it. So it suspends the debt ceiling until 2025. Meaning that the debt can now grow beyond the current set limit. What the heck is it even there for? It caps non-defense spending in 2024, and then it raises it by 1% by 2025. So that's kind of Kevin McCarthy's big thing here. That's what he's hanging his hat on here. That's what has gotten a whole lot of Republicans to say this is actually a good thing, because it caps non-defense spending. Which, by the way, we spend a lot on defense, so it doesn't touch that. But on non-defense spending, it caps it for a year. And then it raises it 1% by 2025. No talking about beyond that, because we could just get to 2025 and beyond and be right back where we started, where this goes out the window, this bill is done, this is expired, and now we've got a new one. And depending on who's in Congress and what Yahoo is in the White House, we could be right back where we started. But yay, we're just going to hit the pause button on a good chunk of the budget for a year. That's not the same, guys. That's not the same as cutting spending. That's not the same as taking in more than you spend and reversing this. That's not the same as taking a hard look at your budget, all bajillion pages of it that nobody ever bothers to actually read, and all the garbage line items and earmarks that are in it, and chopping the mess out of that sucker. This is not the same. But this is what Kevin McCarthy is applauding himself for. We've hit the pause button here till 2025, and then we're going to raise it just a teeny tiny little bit. And then after 2025, we'll have to see. The Congressional Budget Office says that this bill would reduce the deficit by $1.5 trillion over the next 10 years. $1.5 trillion over a decade. I know that sounds like a lot of money, but strung out over a decade compared to the federal budget at this point and compared to our national debt, that's really not that much money. We'd still run a deficit, just less of one, slightly less of one. And that's a lot less, by the way, than the $4.8 trillion that Republicans' bill back in April would have done. This is $1.5 trillion over the next 10 years. The bill changes the work requirements for SNAP benefits, and participants in the food stamps program will increase by about 78,000 people in an average month, according to the Congressional Budget Office. This whole thing is a robbing Peter to pay Paul situation. You shave a little here, you spend a little more there, but we're going to pat ourselves on the back because it pauses certain parts of spending and it reduces our deficit by a little bit. And that's what we're supposed to be super excited about. And of course, Democrats, save a few, they're all about this bill. Here's Hakeem Jeffries, who told reporters this when they asked him whether or not he would be supporting the bill earlier this week.
In that meeting, I made clear that I'm going to support the legislation that is on the floor today, and that I support it without hesitation, reservation, or trepidation. Not because it's perfect, but in divided government, we of course cannot allow the perfect to be the enemy of the good.
Yeah, that's when you know a bill is a good one. That's when you know you've really got a deal when Hakeem Jeffries stands up there and says, oh, absolutely, I'm going to support this thing hook, line, and sinker. Because you know what? It's not perfect. But hey, we're a divided government and you got to just take what you can get. You know, of course, they sing a completely different song when it's the left that wants something. When it's them drawing a hard line, they have no problem shutting down the government and then blaming everybody else for it. They have no problem whatsoever just digging in their heels to get what they want. None whatsoever. So you know that a deal is a bad deal when somebody like Hakeem Jeffries says, oh yeah, this isn't bad. And don't get me wrong. I understand that politics is a game of negotiation. I get that. I actually am one of those that doesn't happen to think that in some cases negotiation is a four-letter word. I actually understand that in order to get things done, particularly in a partisan government, that you have to have some give and take. There are certain things that we should come to the negotiating table on as a country, as two political parties. That totally makes sense. This fictitious world where you're always going to get everything that you want, where your party is always going to win, when you have everything line up according to your ideology 150% of the time, that's ridiculous. And it's a fool's errand to believe that. Most people understand that. So I'm not saying that there's not room for negotiation. What I am saying is that there are certain things that even regardless of your ideology, simply cannot be negotiated on anymore. We are spending infinitely more than we have. We've been doing it now for years. This isn't like a year or two. We've had some spending issues because maybe we had some things come up as a nation, pandemic, conflict, you know, things that can tend to run up your bar tab a little bit. It's not that we've had a couple of years and now we need to rein ourselves back in here. This has been a problem now for decades. Federal spending has been a problem now for decades. And the problem is that it's very closely linked with the culture and the social wars that we're going to talk about in just a few minutes, because when you create the kind of world that the left wants, it inevitably leads to more government spending. That's what they want, right? Everything is taken over by the government, ergo everything is then paid for by the government, and things get a lot more expensive because, again, the government never does anything economically, ever. Okay, so when you create the world that progressives want, when you create a world of dependency, when you create a world with weak family structures or no family structures whatsoever, when you create a world entirely based on social justice, things like reparations, when you create a world where everybody wants to suck off the government teat in some form or fashion, and nobody has any personal responsibility, when you eliminate that as a foundational building block of society, this is what you end up with. You end up with a government that has to keep spending more than it takes in. That's the only way this Mathematica formula ever works out in the history of mankind for any country that has ever tried it. So I'm not saying that there aren't things that are worth negotiating on, but spending yourself down this rabbit hole has to at some point and should have already been a hard line for so-called fiscal conservatives that seem more than happy to take these tiny little non-wins and say, this is the best we've done in years. Well, why is it the best you've done in years? A temporary pause on some spending is the best you've done in years? Why is that? Why is it that we're supposed to take this as a huge win here? That's a pretty poor report on your job performance, supposed conservatives. Of course, Kevin McCarthy is trying to spin all of this like this is actually a great thing. Here's what he had to say on Shannon Bream's Fox News show earlier this week.
There is so much in this that's positive, and measure it to all the other debt ceilings. When Republicans had the presidency, the Senate, and the House, did they ever cut spending? No, they increased it. We were able to do this when the president said he wasn't even going to talk to us. This is really a step in the right direction. It puts us a trajectory that's different. We put a statutory cap on only spending 1% for the next 6 years. So we let government grow, but at a slower rate.
So we're going to keep growing government. He admits it right there. We're going to keep growing government, albeit just a little bit slower. Not actually going to solve the problem, just going to kind of, you know, just going to kind of like tap the brakes on it a little bit. Slow our roll. Still moving forward on this thing. Still trudging toward that cliff. Just, you know, at 35 miles an hour instead of 45. We're not going to cut spending in any meaningful way. We're not going to start spending less than what we're taking in. We're not going to pay down the debt. God forbid we do that. We're not going to get control of the deficit. We're going to still run one of those. We know it. We're going to run a slightly less one, but still going to run a deficit, still going to have this problem. But, you know, we kind of have a spending freeze for what amounts to maybe 2 years after that. You know, it's anybody's guess. We have another added $4 trillion to the debt, which is the projection here. We're going to add another $4 trillion to the debt over the next 2 years under this bill. And we're supposed to buy that that's a good thing because, hey, at least it's not $7 trillion or $10 trillion or $49 trillion. It's only another $4 trillion to the debt over the next 2 years. Could be worse. Yay! And meanwhile, there are no substantial policy reforms that are going to curb federal spending. There's nothing permanent that's going to be put into place to make sure that this doesn't go beyond 2025 and we end up right back where we started. Welfare programs like SNAP and Medicaid and unemployment are just going to keep chugging right along, costing gobs of money with no reforms. There's bloated federal agencies that keep dumping piles of taxpayer cash to do absolutely nothing. Millions in ridiculous grants are still going to get handed out for things like mountain lions running on a treadmill and doggy Shakespeare in the park. Two things that actually happened, by the way. We're supposed to be okay with this because, hey, we're just spiraling in the drain a little bit slower. Y'all should be happy here. Here's how Mike Lee framed it, by the way, senator from Utah. Genuinely good guy, but here's how he tacitly defended McCarthy even as he blasted the bill. He said, I believe McCarthy was misled, not malicious in signing on to this deal, but the deal simply does not do what its proponents claim it does, not even close. It's time to go back to the drawing board, or even better, go back to what the House already passed. Notice what's really interesting about Lee's statement here, by the way. This statement, when he says, look, I don't think he actually did this on purpose. I don't think that he was mean-spirited, because that is what matters when you're talking about spending trillions of dollars of taxpayer cash and, you know, doing the job you were elected to do as a conservative politician and actually promoting responsible federal spending. What really matters is whether or not you made a dumb choice or a stupid deal maliciously. What really matters is your intent behind it.
We only got to look at 11% of the budget to find these cuts. We have to look at the entire budget. The Congress has done this before.
Why didn't you see the whole budget?
Because the president walled off all the others.
I'm really sorry, but that doesn't get you a hill of beans with me. Okay.
So
and he wouldn't let you see?
Interest on the debt. So you only have 11% wow. to look at this budget.
Okay. And this is part of the problem with a bloated federal government and a Congress that passes legislation that is so massive that no one can realistically read it. No one can get their hands around it. Congressmen are relying on staffers to thumb through this thing. No one's actually taking note of every earmark or every bad policy that's thrown into the footnotes here. These are massive spending bills. These are massive deals, massive budget, all of this stuff. The ACA, you can go back for years. These bills that get shoved through that people are expected to vote on within hours of getting handed them are so gigantic that even the Speaker of the House likely doesn't have time to sit down and actually read it, comprehend it, understand it, weigh the pros and cons of it. This is part of the problem with a federal government that's dealing in this kind of money, with this kind of power. It's so bloated and so massive that nothing can get done responsibly. It's simply not possible, even if they wanted to, which is problem number one. Problem number two is that we have a Congress that doesn't know its head from a hole in the wall. So back in January of this year, McCarthy, who was all about curbing spending and blah, 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 blah. Back then, you know, you're going to hold the line. We're going to make sure the federal government can't just run around spending money it doesn't have. All that lip service. Here's what he wrote on Twitter. If you gave your child a credit card and they kept hitting the limit, you wouldn't just keep increasing it. You would sit down with them to identify where they are overspending, and where they can change their behavior. No. The first thing I'd do is take away the credit card. I'm not going to sit down with my kid while they're still holding on to the credit card and explain to little Johnny there why he can't go out plunking Ferraris down on my Capital One. No, that's not the first thing I'm doing there, Kevin. The first thing I'm doing is I'm taking the credit card and I'm shredding it. The second thing that I'm doing is reevaluating whether my kid is responsible enough to have a credit card in the first place. Because it sure sounds like he's not. This is the problem. Congress is the child. The federal government and all the agencies that are getting all of this money, no. They're not the ones with the runaway train of spending. This idea that Kevin McCarthy wants to paint this picture that, look, we're just taking away our kid's credit card. No, you are the kid. You are the spend happy kid. These agencies, these departments, they're only spending the money that Congress is allocating. Congress is the child in this scenario. And if the members who are currently in Congress cannot be trusted to effectively and responsibly spend our money, then maybe it's time that we find people who can. Both sides of the aisle here, P.S. If you cannot do one of your most basic jobs by the Constitution, which, by the way, I think this spans the gamut. I think that this is about, I think that managing our taxpayer cash effectively and responsibly is not only about fiscal responsibility, it's also about national security. Because a country that is this far in debt, a country that every couple of years is bucking up against this question of whether or not to raise the debt ceiling, and we're having these massive fights over it, and that matters to our stock market, that matters to the economy, all of that has an effect. That's not good for national security. That's not good for our standing in the world. This has widespread implications over a slew of categories here. This is one of Congress's most basic functions. I know that they've got a whole bunch of other things that they've decided to stick their hands into that are found nowhere in the Constitution whatsoever. But this is actually one of the things that they're supposed to do, and they're supposed to do responsibly. And if you can't even do that, then maybe we should find some people who can. Because simply suspending the debt ceiling and freezing spending for a couple of years is not a good deal. Even the White House, by the way, couldn't spend all of this like it was a good thing. Here's Shayla Young. She's the director of the Office of Management and Budget, because we still have one of those, even though we haven't managed our budget in, decades. So really, what's the point? But here's Young. She's dodging a question about this bill's effect on inflation, kind of like Hunter Biden trying to get away from child support bills. Check this out.
Taking a larger view at this, should the debt ceiling deal get signed, will it help bring down inflation over the next 12 months?
So what I will tell you is, What would have been terrible for inflation in the economy would have been a default.
So then the answer there is no. Let me just clear that up for anybody who didn't understand what she was saying in the middle of all that gobbledygook. This bill does not get spending under control, especially long term. It does not keep from increasing the debt, doesn't keep us from running a deficit, and it does not help with inflation. If you think that this is going to at all impact the fact that you are still spending gobs more at the grocery store with no end in sight, that's not going to go away. This does not meaningfully impact the deficit. It does not meaningfully impact the economy. This is good for Congress. Really isn't good for the average American. But we're supposed to applaud it like seals at a circus anyway, because the elitists who fund their beach houses off of our tax dollars tell us to. Biden, of course, while he's trying to remember who he is and what day of the week it is, said on Wednesday that all of this was going as planned.
We're going to deal with the debt ceiling. I think things are going as planned, God willing.
Of course it is. Of course it is, because leftists' ultimate plan is to run this country into the ground, turn it into another bankrupt socialist hellhole. So I guess in that respect, he's right. This is going according to plan. And that's how you know that this isn't good. When Kevin McCarthy is over here doing backflips, trying to convince people that this is actually a good thing, because we eked out, a couple little fiscal wins here and there, because it's not quite as bad as it could have been. It's a little apocalyptic, not like a world-ending one. When he's over there trying to convince everybody that this is, you know, not a horrible thing, when he's over there trying to convince everybody that this actually is fiscally responsive, that this is you know, conservative, that this is a win for those concerned with federal spending. And Biden is over here saying everything's going as planned. And Hakeem Jeffries is over here saying, oh, I'm going to vote for it. Absolutely. And you might say, okay, well, Brittany, I've heard that there are some Democrats that aren't, you know, super enthused with this. It doesn't seem like they're all on board. Yeah, there are some Democrats that are not super on board with this. They tend to be your mostly far left fringe morons anyway, who aren't happy no matter what you do. Any day that they wake up and the sun shines and there's white men on the planet, they're pissed off. You're not going to make them happy anyway. Until we just completely cave into socialism and start taxing everybody 100% and let the government run absolutely everything from, you know, the federal government all the way down to the local dog catcher's office and everything in between, until we just turn over the keys to anything and everything to the government, those people aren't going to be happy. So yes, are there some of those on the left that don't think that this bill is a good thing? Sure. That's not saying much, considering those that are supporting this that think that it's fantastic, or at least are satisfied enough with the wins that they're getting to not cause a big stink over it. That right there tells you just about everything you need to know. Unfortunately, when it comes to being forced to pay for stuff that you don't like, millions of Americans are in the same boat when it comes to their health coverage. So if you're a person of faith that's enrolled in traditional health insurance plans, chances are that your monthly payments are going to subsidize things you don't agree with, things like abortion and transgender surgeries. That's where share healthcare is different. Share healthcare is not health insurance. It's an ACA-exempt cost-sharing program between people of like beliefs and faith who want the affordable coverage that they need without financing things they don't believe in. If you're sick of paying exorbitant premiums for coverage you don't use and subsidizing medical procedures that violate your beliefs, check out sharehealthcare.com. Enter the referral code MRCTV23, that's sharehealthcare.com, MRCTV23, and find a plan that's right for you and your family today. So-called conservatives in Congress, by the way, it turns out, are not the only ones that are searching for their misplaced spine this week. Toronto Blue Jays pitcher Anthony Bass has been bullied into apologizing for simply sharing someone else's video, blasting Target and Bud Light for pushing their perverse trans agenda and defending a biblical worldview. This isn't even a video that he came up with. He just shared it and he got absolutely lambasted. So to understand this, here's the video that Anthony Bass shared on social media.
Here's the reason biblically why I believe Christians ought to be boycotting Target and Bud Light and any other corporation that's pushing the things they're pushing. I think a lot of people make this into a political issue, or they say, oh, what's the big deal? If, you know, is it really going to make that big of a difference if I'm shopping there or not shopping there? Here's what the Bible says. It tells us what to do as Christians in Ephesians chapter 5. It says this: take no part in the unfruitful works of darkness, but instead expose them, for it is shameful to even talk of the things that they do in secret. So what does that mean to take no part? Well, what's Target do? It's a business. They make money. They sell things. And to take part in that is to take part in that God of Mammon that they're serving, and to take part in the darkness that they're purveying and getting out to the world and shoving into children's faces. And to take part in that is to give them your money. And I believe the Bible gives us radical precedent to say, no, we are running from that, and to instead expose those things, to shout it to all the people that have ears to hear that this is evil. This is demonic. We won't stand for it. We're not going to go to the stores anymore, and we're not going to give them our money. We're going to let our voice be heard so that people can see the light and so that people can be pulled out of the darkness.
But of course, we can't let anyone have that point of view. You're not allowed to, especially if you're in the public limelight, if you are an athlete, if you are a celebrity, if you are anybody of note whatsoever, you are not allowed to have your own voice. You're not allowed to have your own point of view. You're certainly not allowed to go against the left's prescribed narrative on social and cultural issues. You either have to voice explicit support for them, or you need to shut up and sit down because they will come after you with a pitchfork mob, which is exactly what happened here. Bass was forced to apologize. He actually wasn't forced. I'm not going to say that he was forced. He was pressured into apologizing and he gave in. That's exactly what happened here. Nobody can force you to apologize. You have to consent to that. But this is what the left does. They bully people and they badger people and they threaten people and they dox people and they cancel people until the person finally surrenders, cries uncle, and says, fine, you can have what you want. I will apologize. Just please don't wreck my life and come after my family. So Bass apologized for sharing the video. Here's his apology.
I recognized yesterday, I made a post that was hurtful to the Pride community, which includes friends of mine and close family members of mine, and I am truly sorry for that. I just spoke with my teammates and shared with them my actions yesterday, and I apologized with them. And as of right now, I'm using the Blue Jays resources to better educate myself, to make better decisions moving forward. The ballpark is for everybody. We include all fans at the ballpark, and we want to welcome everybody. That's all I have to say. Thank you.
Freaking coward. Freaking coward. You either believe a biblical worldview, you either support that. That's either a part of your core belief system or it's not. If you actually believe that this trans ideology is wrong, if you believe that it is wrong and evil and perverse to push it on children, if you believe in a biblical worldview that is set according to a standard created by God and not man, if that is your belief, you have no reason whatsoever to apologize for it at all, nor would you if that was what you truly believed. So let me say this, if you can't stand the heat, get the heck out of the kitchen. I am so sick of watching people take a stand for 2 seconds only to cave the minute the pressure gets cranked up, the minute they face some adversity for it, the minute that it might actually cost them something in the public arena. Well, then all of a sudden, all of your beliefs and all the things that you say you stand for just go flying out the window because it's more important to keep your job. It's more important to keep your clout. It's more important to keep the relationship. It's more important to keep whatever it is that you have to sacrifice your conscience and your soul for. And I'm tired of watching people do that. If you can't hold this line, if this isn't real to you, if you're going to tuck tail and run, just stay out of the fight altogether. Leave it to the rest of us that are in it to win it here. I am so, so tired of this. Because meanwhile, over on MSNBC, the idiots over at that outlet brought on an economist who outright claimed on cable news that boycotting Target is literally terrorism.
From the Target CEO saying the reason they were backing off is they were worried about the safety of their employees. So look, one of two things are true. It could be they're cowards and they use that as protection and a smokescreen so that they could make a cowardly decision. Or it could be that they're actually genuinely concerned about the well-being of their employees and have had credible threats. And if that's the case, when Target caves into this, then it says that the moment you threaten the employees of even a very large corporation, you get to control its policies. This is economic terrorism, literally terrorism, creating fear among the workers and forcing the corporations to sell the things you want, not sell the things you don't.
Literally terrorism, to refuse to buy things you don't support, to speak with your money. If you don't run off to Target and solely buy your stuff from them, even if you don't agree with this whole Pride agenda, if you use your money to speak, you are literally a terrorist. You might as well be flying planes into buildings. That's actually what this guy said. That this is, and this, he's given a national platform to make this outrageous claim. But see, that's what the left can get away with. That's what progressives can get away with. That's what the alphabet mafia can get away with. They can say something like that. Whereas over here, somebody can say, look, I subscribe to a biblical worldview based on a book that's thousands of years old that I didn't write, that I believe sets the rules, and I believe in that. And you get canceled and forced to apologize amazing double standard here. The LGBTQ crowd and trans radicals and their groupies can target children. They can get your kids alone in a school and teach them to question their gender, can help them transition without parental knowledge or consent. They can parade, literally parade, their garbage and perversion down public streets in full view of everybody. And in tax-funded libraries and in parks and in schools, they can shove gender-bending clothes at you in the front of a store when you just pop in to grab a gallon of milk. They can take over sports. They can praise anti-Catholic hate groups at baseball games and flaunt pride gear all over arenas and stadiums and make those places completely unpalatable for anybody with basic decency. They can take over the entertainment industry. They push this debauchery on our families and our children in our own living rooms. They can use your tax dollars to fund it on street murals and in education and healthcare and just about every single facet of society. But if you boycott Target, if you speak with your money, because you decided that you don't want to spend it in a place that sells tuck-friendly swimsuits for boys, you're a terrorist. The LA Dodgers can venerate a group of drag queens who openly mock Jesus Christ as part of their literal reason for existence as a group. And that's okay. They can stand out on the pitcher's mound and give them an award for defiling the faith of millions of people. And that's fine. But a pitcher can't share a video supporting a biblical worldview on gender and sexuality without being made to grovel and apologize to the pansies whose painted toes he just stepped on. If you are still a conservative, If you are a conservative, or if you are a Christian, if you are a person that stands against this nonsense, but you still have your head in the sand that the culture war isn't one really worth fighting, I've got news for you. Progressives are fighting a culture war with you. It's not going to be a choice of whether or not it's worth fighting. It's here. You don't shop at Target? You simply say, look, I'm not going to hem and haw on social media about this. I'm not going to make videos blasting them about this. I'm just not going to spend my money there. You are a literal terrorist. That's what they think of you. And if they continue to weaponize our federal agencies the way that we've seen, if we keep going down that road, which I have absolutely no thought is going to stop anytime soon. Pretty soon they're going to start treating you like a terrorist. That's where we're headed. It sounds hyperbolic. It sounds outlandish. It sounds like it's something that couldn't happen here, but it's exactly what's happening here. It's a culture war, whether you like it or not. The only decision you have to make is which side of it you're on. Because it's here. And it's not going to stop. And meanwhile, you know, we've got conservatives in Congress that aren't acting like it. If you think that you've got champions there, you might need to look somewhere else for your hero. With that, that's the Brittany Hughes Show for this Thursday. Thank you so much for joining me again. Sorry for not having an episode last week. Hopefully, I won't. This is the first time in my entire life that I've had laryngitis. Seriously, just out of nowhere. So hopefully it won't happen again. And we'll keep chugging right along. With that in mind, make sure you head over to Apple Podcasts, hit subscribe on The Brittany Hughes Show. That way you won't miss an episode, even if occasionally I do. Sorry about that. Also, make sure that you subscribe to the Newsbusters podcast. That one's on Mondays, Wednesdays, and Friday with Tim Graham over at Newsbusters. Fantastic. You do not want to miss that one. Also, mrc.org/donate, the Media Research Center, for those of you who don't know, is a 501c3 nonprofit organization. The good news is that means all of our content is free to you. Everything we do over at MRC TV, everything we do over at Newsbusters, all of it is free to you. We don't have a subscription model. We don't put anything behind a paywall. We don't charge you a dime. But it does mean that we run entirely off of donor support. So please, if you don't already financially partner with us, mrc.org/donate. Find out more information about how you can support the Media Research Center and keep content like the Brittany Hughes Show coming for free. And sharehealthcare.com. If you're fed up with traditional health insurance, want another option that actually fits better with both your budget and your beliefs, sharehealthcare.com. MRCTV23 is the referral code there. And I will see you guys back here next week. Have a blessed weekend.